Today, Dr. Jessica Peck helps us understand the mental health struggles that young men face and how churches and families can step in.
I almost don't recognize my pediatric practice. I've been in pediatrics for 25 years, and I might have seen a mental health complaint once a month. Now I'm seeing them multiple every day.
Then we'll hear about a social media scam that's becoming a deadly trap for young men and women.
You think about these types of circumstances, like I said before, of something that you could possibly predict, you know, mental illness, you know, there was no signs of depression, no signs of any antisocial behavior. Walker was a normal teenager until that night.
It's the weekend of April 20th and 21st. I'm Jeff Shambly, and this is The Stand Radio. One of the trends we're seeing in our culture is the increasing deterioration of mental health in young adult and adolescent men. What are some of the reasons, and are there indicators that we as parents can watch for? Joining me to answer these questions is Dr. Jessica Peck. She's a pediatric nurse practitioner, author, professor, and host of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, heard weekday afternoons here on American Family Radio. Dr. Peck, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Give us a sense of the magnitude of the mental health problems that we're seeing in young men and boys.
Well, not too long ago, there was a national crisis that was declared by several leading organizations in child health saying we have a serious issue, and it was echoed by the Surgeon General. And when I'm asked about it, people say, is it really that bad? And as a nurse, I feel like I have to give them an honest answer, and I tell them, no, it's not as bad as you think. It's worse. I almost don't recognize my pediatric practice. I've been in pediatrics for 25 years, and I might have seen a mental health complaint once a month. Now I'm seeing them multiple every day. We have suicide as the second leading cause of death for young people. Depression is the leading cause of disability for young people, and especially young men. We are seeing the crisis is real. It's here and it's now.
What is causing the increase in all of this? I mean, in your 25 years or so, it's gone up. What are some of the reasons behind that?
Researchers really can't agree on a singular cause, but looking as boots on the ground and healthcare providers in the community and working with kids, we know that social media is definitely a factor. We know that this is one of the most disconnected and lonely generations we have ever seen. So while they have online interactions, they do not know how to have in-person interactions. And God created us to have eye contact and to hear people's voice and to see their handwriting and to have those kinds of bonds, and they don't have that. They're alone. We also see the internet making it very easy to engage in a lot of risk-taking behavior. There are invitations to parties. There are drugs being ordered off of Snapchat and TikTok, and lots of kids who have never done that before, they see it so normalized that they might thinking they're just getting a pain medication. We see things like vaping. We see things like sexual behaviors, especially things like sexting and pornography. And when kids engage in this risk-taking behavior, they know it's wrong, but they don't really know why. They feel a lot of shame. They don't talk to anyone about it, and they isolate and they just decompensate until the point where their psychological trauma starts to manifest as physical symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when they come to me as a healthcare provider, and it's a point of crisis.
That can be terrifying for a parent to hear.
Absolutely.
I mean, with all of these increases and all of these factors, and Dr. Peck, so many of these things, if not all of them, are beyond the control of a parent. So when a parent looks at a son, what are some of the indicators that one might pick up on?
Well, a lot of parents are fear-based, and I don't want parents to do that. I want parents to be faith-informed. And when you're looking at your child, they will hide things from you, not because they are evil or they're sinning, which of course, you know, there is that issue, but they hide a lot of times because they care so much what their parents think. and they don't want to disappoint their parents. They're also very afraid of the consequences because many times there has been no conversation in this arena, so they don't know. It feels very strange and scary to come and bring up an issue like sexting if they've never had any conversation about it. So for parents to feel empowered, I want them to know that they need to engage in a conversation, and it can be very awkward, but be authentically awkward. Do it anyway. Lead with compassion. And especially with boys, it's much easier to talk when you're doing something. So doing side by side, you know, walking, fishing, hunting, whatever it is that you do, spend time with your child and look for those opportunities for conversation to naturally arise. Because a lot of times there are no signs, but sometimes when those signs are there, most of the time parents know. They know that something is off. And when their kids are little, if they have an ear infection, you know, they're fussy, they got a runny nose, maybe it's an ear infection, let me call. This is, they're off, they're not eating very well, they're not sleeping very well. Let me just wait and see if it passes. Don't wait. You need to address that then. And it starts with a conversation between parent and child.
What age would you recommend those conversations begin? Because it looks like we're getting younger and younger in the need to address some of these things.
I recommend some of these conversations start as early as birth. And it depends on what your situation is. Because some families may have family members who are struggling with things like addiction, and that's going to necessitate a conversation earlier than a family maybe that's not struggling with that. But what I'll say is this. There's a lot of parents who are afraid to bring up these conversations. They don't want to expose their kids to things they haven't been exposed to. But I would say we must expose them in a developmentally appropriate way that positions us as the expert. So I'll give you a concrete example. I talked to my daughter starting in the fifth grade about pornography. And what I told her was, there are screens all around you. And people will watch things that are not up to your standards. You might see something on a screen that's confusing or that's alarming or that makes you feel like something's wrong, or it could even make your body feel strange. If that happens, when that happens, I want you to come and talk to me about it. Sure enough, she did. Now, I didn't tell her all the nitty-gritty details or traumatize her, but I just gave her a signal that that might happen, and there was an open door for conversation. And thankfully, we were able to intervene very early when another girl in her class told her about a pornographic video in the fifth grade.
Wow. Good advice on entering into some of those conversations. Let's talk about the physiology just a little bit, because there are particular things going on in the mind and the body of adolescents that do affect the way that they process anxiety. What are some of those considerations, maybe even diet, that parents can address?
Sure. So first of all, we have to know that teen brains are developmentally wired to think they're invincible. They think something bad might happen, but it's not going to happen to me. They're also concrete thinkers when they enter the teenage years. They cannot rationalize risk. So often we'll ask the question as parents, what were you thinking? The answer is, they weren't, because their brain is not yet wired that way. The other thing that parents need to know is that the executive function in the prefrontal cortex, which is the decision-making center in the brain, it's very immature. And what I see is that their thumb moves faster than their brain. So when they have a smartphone and they're having a decision to make, a very small decision on a very big stage, they have underdeveloped character to handle that overexposure. And so we have to have patience to know that some of these things, they're not making a decision because they're intentionally violating their spiritual or religious beliefs or their faith. They just simply don't have the maturity to think through these decisions. And so what parents need to do about that is be very intentional in talking through decision-making when you're making it yourself. So if I, as a parent, am deciding what TV show I want to watch, I'll talk that through out loud and I'll say, I'm thinking about watching a show. Here's the site that I'm going to look it up, to look at a review, to see if it would be appropriate. Here are the things that are alarming to me, and here's how I'm going to decide if I'm going to watch it or not. Now, here's what parents need to know about that. Their kids are going to roll their eyes and say, really, Mom, this is so lame. Here, do it anyway. Do it anyway. They need that modeled.
Obviously, God has provided moms and dads to be the primary influencers in their children's lives. But what are some of the ways that parents can coordinate with others that might be able to help as well?
You know, I say that you need a village to raise a child, and you need a team of people around you. There's five people that I recommend. First is an intercessor, someone who will pray for you, pray for your teen, that your teen can reach out to and know, I can ask you to pray for me at any time. For my kids, that's their grandfather. He is an amazing prayer warrior, so they ask him to pray for them. They also need a counselor. Now, this is not in a technical sense, but someone they can depend on to give them wise advice. So we as parents need to point those people out and say, this is a trustworthy person. This is someone you can go to advice. You know, you're struggling with this. I want you to go to this person, because sometimes it's easier to talk to somebody else. And then we're having those people that we have already chosen and approved, really, for our kids that they're going to. The third one is a spiritual leader. So that might be a pastor, a youth group leader, someone who is giving them spiritual mentorship. They need a friend. Someone who's wildly unimpressed with them, someone who knows the real them, and that they like being around, and that you like them being around. And then the last person is someone who's in the same boat. So maybe that's someone whose family is going through a divorce, someone who's also homeschooled, someone who's on a traveling sports team, someone who can understand where they are. If you have this team of people in place, when you have a point of crisis, it's easy to activate. And you can just call those people you've already identified. Now, I've gone so far as to name those people in my phone. That's how I label them in my phone, that I know that because I know that's the people I need.
Yeah, that's good advice. You've talked about not only having a defensive strategy that parents are very good at, keeping the bad out, but when it comes to our boys, there is an offensive strategy that we can use as well. What would that look like?
Well, my husband believes there's no parenting problem that can't be solved with a sports analogy, so this is where that comes in. A defensive strategy is, of course, protecting them from negative influence, but an offensive strategy is building relationships so that you are the primary influence. And how you do that is actually very simple. You spend time with them. You spend quality time with them. That is what they want more than anything, even when it seems like they don't. So if you ask and you're not in the habit of spending time together, ask again. Don't let rejection discourage you. Join in on doing something they want to do. And a question you could ask would be, what would you ask me to do with you if you knew I wouldn't say no? So that may be a video game. It may be a hike. It may be, you know, some sort of arts and crafts. You don't know what they want to do, but having them inviting them to teach you something is a great way to build a relationship. So just spending time. And then, of course, I cannot state enough the importance of praying and being in God's word. Working on your own spiritual health is something that's so authentic that will be caught and not taught, and it will help your parenting for sure.
Yeah, good advice. Dr. Peck, how can people find out about you and your ministry?
Well, I am here on American Family Radio every day from 2 to 3 at the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. That's my professor brain, my hands-on nursing experience, and heart as a mom. And you can find me on Instagram and on Facebook at Dr. Nurse Mama, and on my website, drnursemama.com.
Dr. Jessica Peck, thank you for being with us today on The Stan Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our next story is a sobering account of one family who lost their teenage son to a social media scam that's becoming more and more common today. It's an alarming trend that you need to know about. I want to introduce you to Brian Montgomery. I invited him to share what happened to his son, Walker, when he was 16 years old and was just like any other teen.
He developed this intense love for football, decided that that was something he really wanted to excel at, and boy, he put the work in and just did great at it. Had a great social life, a great group of Christian friends. I mean, just the kind of friends, you know, you dream that your kids will have.
Everything was normal on the night of November 30th, 2022. But the next morning brought Brian, Courtney, and their children into a completely different reality.
Sometime, it looks like from the forensics on the telephone, it was about midnight, Walker was approached by somebody he didn't know, but appeared to be somebody that knew other friends through their social media platforms and even reference that in the conversation to try to gain credibility. So these people pose as, you know, attractive opposite sex people, whether they're trying to scheme a girl or a boy, you know. And so she pretends to be a girl about Walker's age, very attractive, very normal conversation, just gaining credibility is what they're doing. And, you know, that leads to her inviting Walker into a what would be considered kind of like a FaceTime call through Instagram, where, you know, he could see her, she could see him. And that leads to a sexual encounter between Walker and this person. Walker didn't know it, but it wasn't a girl. It was Nigerians, you know, some Nigerian man that was had all that fake content to make him believe that's what it was. But Walker was real, and Walker was, in effect, in a sexual act with this person, and they recorded that with other devices from the other side with intent to extort him for money. And so directly after that conversation was over, they immediately started asking Walker for money. And, of course, you know, the panic there is something that is hard for anybody to imagine, you know. I mean, we can all relate to the mistakes we've made in life. We can all relate to, you know, decisions we made that were bad decisions. And most of those have been kept secret. But in that moment, Walker realized that this couldn't be kept a secret. So now he's trying to figure out how to get out of it. And they're communicating back and forth. And these people, the best way I can describe, they're just vile people. I mean, they have no regard for life. And Walker's back and forth with them. You can't do this. This is not right. This is not legal. You know, I don't have the money. They wanted $1,000. That's what they wanted. And, you know, he says, I don't have the money. I'm not going to give you any money. They were contending with him. He'd steal it from your mom and dad. And he's like, I can't do that. And to up the pressure, they started sending him screenshots of the video that they had of him and showing him that they were sending those videos out to people in his Instagram list. And of course they do their homework. You know, they knew who was close to Walker, they knew who had liked his post, they knew who he was friends with. And so they start going down that list, and the panic is ramped up even to a higher level. And finally they get to Courtney, Walker's mom, and you know, Walker responds after that particular interchange with, I'm just going to kill myself. And you know, when he says that, I mean, these people knew they weren't going to get paid at that point, especially if he did it. They knew that if he did it, that their criminal, you know, stakes just went higher, that they didn't care. I mean, their response was, go ahead, because you're already dead anyway. Finally, around 2 o'clock in the morning, that call terminated. So he wrestled for a couple hours with them directly. And then after that call was terminated, Walker went into my safe and got a handgun, and went back up to his room, and sometime between then and the next morning, he took his own life.
In a matter of hours, the Montgomerys' world was thrown into chaos. They were left with no clues and no apparent reason to explain what happened.
Nothing made sense. Nothing was in line. Nothing was in its proper place. Everything was different. And we lived that way for, you know, 6 or 8 weeks before we understood all that story that I just told you. I mean, all we knew the next morning is that Walker was gone, and it did not make any sense at all. You know, it's you think about these types of circumstances, like I said before, of something that you could possibly predict, you know, mental illness, you know, depression, bullying, things that are normal, normal to the outcome of suicide. Those are things that usually you expect to observe in a kid or an adult or anybody would do that. But that was not the case here. I mean, you know, people have asked us, well, how long did he suffer? I mean, how long did they attack him? How long did this go on? This was, Walker went to bed normal and didn't wake up the next day. Courtney found him the next morning. That morning is, you know, like I said, December the 1st, you know, that anniversary was just a few days ago as we're recording this. And, we never had a chance to help Walker. We never had a chance to say, hey, buddy, we're going to make it okay. We'll move to another planet. We'll do anything, you know, to have you back. We just didn't have that chance.
Finally, because Brian and Courtney had access to the passcode for Walker's phone, some of the answers they had been waiting for began to come. They were able to give this critical information to local police.
So they took the phone and ran forensics on it, and they were the first ones to give me some idea. And it was, I think it was into January. They said, hey, look, we found a conversation on Instagram between Walker and somebody that night. We don't know what it is, but we feel like it's connected. Starkville Police Department opened their own investigation because there were some other kids in the community that had been approached by the same scam. Maybe different people, but the same scam. And they reached out to the FBI, and they came to our house, sat down with Courtney and I, and just outlaid the conversation and showed us. And they said, look, we've gone through Walker's phone from top to bottom. We looked at every conversation, every photo. I mean, all the things we think that are gone are not gone. They're all there. Anything deleted, all the conversations deleted, everything. And we see no issue with Walker. Walker spent a lot of time looking at football stuff, hunting stuff, and talking to his friends. Just a normal teenager. There was no signs of depression, no signs of any antisocial behavior. Walker was a normal teenager until that night. And, you know, as parents, when you hear that, I can't communicate to you how many things you think about over that 6-8 week period of what's happened here. You know, what have, where have we been? I mean, obviously we missed out. We did not do the job raising Walker. We thought we did, because this doesn't just happen. But to truly learn that Walker was who we thought we were. I mean, we knew it. We had faith in Walker. But it's, when you see that, it's hard to maintain that. And so getting that information was valuable, because we, at that point, we understood multiple things. One, that Walker was exactly who we thought he was. And also that this threat that came into our house that night was much greater than we ever could have anticipated, that something could be that threatening through technology and not even be there, but might as well have walked into that room and shot Walker themselves. And that's hard to imagine. That's a really scary thing. And I think if we don't take that serious for that, what it is, we have a chance of doing just what we did and letting things slip by. There are some real dangers in this world of technology that most parents are not aware of. We weren't aware of it. You know, we thought the worst thing could happen is Walker spend up too much time on his phone at night and, you know, all the normal things that we worry about as parents, but never dreamed that that technology would grant access to someone that really truly had true destruction in their intent for Walker.
Because of what happened to Walker and the same story being repeated in many other families, Brian is actively speaking in support of the Kids Online Safety Act. It requires tech companies to exercise reasonable care to prevent their platforms from endangering kids.
It's not perfect. It's not going to solve all our problems. Today, for this particular thing that happened to Walker, you know, the hope would have been that that person wouldn't have been able to contact Walker. You know, this is an account originating out of Nigeria. Instagram knew that. It's an account most likely was recently created. They knew that. There are certain things in that process that their system could have easily flagged and said, okay, this shouldn't be going to a 16-year-old boy in Starkville, Mississippi. Something's wrong here. Let's filter that to their dad and let their dad and mom and let them deal with the yes and no. But that's not what happened. It was direct access. What I would encourage parents to do today, number one, start the line of communication with their kids with an oversight program within their home. And what I mean by oversight, I use that terminology because it kind of gives you the perception of mom and dad are watching. Well, I think that's right. I think that's what we're called to do as parents. As parents, we're called to protect our kids, to guide them to make good decisions until they're able to make the decisions on their own. And so we see a society where parents have withdrawn correction. So what kind of oversight? Well, number one, Walker shouldn't have had his phone that night. His phone should have been in our room. And people criticize me for saying that, but I don't care. You know, the reality is nothing good happens between 10 at night and 6 in the morning. I'm just saying the point is, as a kid, that taking the phone into parents' bedrooms for charging at night, number one, prevents that phone being in places where bad things happen, number one. Number two, it gives the parents and kids an opportunity to have this expectation that mom and dad are keeping an eye on what's going on. I'm not there to spy on my kids. I mean, look, we all grew up as, you know, kids where we said things about our parents we shouldn't have said, right? Or did things we shouldn't have done. That's not what this is about. I want my kids to be able to make the mistakes that they learn from, not make the mistakes they can't recover from. And that's what we're talking about here. And that are some of the ramifications that this technology can end up offering. The other thing is just a continual conversation about what are the things out there that are happening today that you don't know about. We didn't know about this. I mean, you don't generally protect against things you don't know about, and which is why we're so passionate about sharing, just like with interviews like this, because it still is not a perfect solution, right? I mean, we know of kids, even in our own school, that have still been subject to this scam after Walker committed suicide from it. It's a very well done scam. It's not easy to identify. But if we're not having those conversations, I know if Walker would have had the idea of, hey, I'm not alone, I'm not the only person this has ever happened to, I feel like he would have made a different decision. But the fact that he felt like he was all by himself, and I know that that's a difference because I've talked to too many parents at this point that their kids have come through this, and they've actually said, had I not known about what happened to Walker, I would have made a different decision. And parents said, I don't know where we would have been if we hadn't have at least had these conversations. So that awareness, those conversations, that closeness of family, I think all of those things are gonna be major contributing factors to thriving through this.
The Kids Online Safety Act has been introduced to the U.S. Senate and is awaiting further action. As Brian said, it's so important that we as parents maintain open communication with our children, monitor their phone usage, know their phone and social media passwords, and charge their phones in our rooms at night. To get other helpful ideas and support, visit screenstrong.org. That's screenstrong.org. Next week on The Stand Radio, we'll step inside a shelter for women and children and see firsthand how the gospel is bringing hope out of hardship. Then we'll hear how to navigate faith, life, and politics in the age of AI deception. You can hear today's interviews with Dr. Jessica Peck and Brian Montgomery when you get The Stand Radio podcast on the AFR app. We're also on iTunes and Spotify. And for a free 6-month trial subscription to The Stand magazine, just visit afa.net/thestand. If you have a question or comment about anything you've heard today, email us at thestand@afa.net. I'm Jeff Shambly. Thanks for listening today. Join us again next time here on The Stand Radio.